right, 5 o'clock hour. We're just a few minutes away. Phoenix Suns taking on the Milwaukee Bucks. You'll hear it on.
They're taking on who?
Boy, thank goodness. They're taking on the Milwaukee Bucks.
And what does that mean for the Milwaukee Bucks?
Bad news for the Bucks!
Bad news for the Bucks!
Woo! And hope Dakota really got to hear that, baby.
Really like pushing deadlines, don't you?
Man,
no, we got an hour to go.
Are you?
It was a little bit earlier than I have been going lately.
We don't.
We don't have an hour to go. We've got about 7 minutes to go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
right.
No, I guess we do have to specify that. Does the bad news have to happen before tip-off or just by the end of our show?
It's a good call.
You
it's a good call.
You set the tone for the game.
That's a good call. Yeah, we got to set the tone for the game, baby.
Yeah, it's got to be before tip.
Look, this is not my
game. We got that in under the wire.
This is a Jordan Gambo thing. So it's whatever you guys decide. You got to do it before the game. In my humble opinion, it has to be done. I was worried. I couldn't have more obviously vocally set it up. The Suns and the Bucks are about to tip off, Gambo.
Yep.
Nudge.
We got it in.
Nudge. Yeah.
Are you the guy who, when you back in the old days when we used to like mail things to people, you would pay the bill on the day that it was due and get like that postmark, right? The bill is due on the 17th. I am paying it on the 17th and not one day earlier, right?
Now, my mother told me to have everything in, told me everything in like a week to 10 days before.
Okay, so
I've never paid a bill late in my life.
Never, not once? Not
I've
once.
Never once paid any bill late in my entire life.
Wow.
My mom was a stickler with that stuff, man.
I wish I could say the same thing. I cannot say the same thing. Wait, hold on a sec.
Oh, what you got?
I've got a change to the starting lineup tonight for the Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
Did you have this in your update, Sarah?
No, I did not see that.
Okay. According to the Phoenix Suns Twitter account, Chris Paul is starting. Devin Booker is starting. Mikal Bridges is starting. Dario Saric is starting. Ooh. And DeAndre Ayton is starting. That's the Phoenix Suns official Twitter account tweeting out that Saric is getting the start for Jay Crowder.
Wow.
Huh.
Let me see. I'm going to see what I can find out.
I'm looking at my Suns. I've got like a list of people that I follow specific to the Suns, and I'm not seeing any mentions at all on that list of any kind of an injury, any kind of Now, this is interesting. Are they doing like a small ball thing? With Dario, is Jay, I'm looking up at the screen now, and Jay Crowder is warming up, so is he warming up, but is he being given the night off? Is this a rest night for Jay Crowder? Is he going to play? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Send some messages over, we'll see.
Okay. That was not on the agenda for us to talk about, but
could be a little shakeup in the lineup just to see.
Just to see. I don't know. But I just noticed it on the old Twitter just a second ago. And sure enough, that is the official Phoenix Suns tweeted out lineup for tonight. Dario Saric in, Jay Crowder out going into this game against the Milwaukee Bucks, which again can be heard on ESPN 620. But as is the rule for us here on the Burns and Gambo show, when we've got a game going on that we're on opposite of, I promise we'll keep you completely updated on that game. So if you want to keep listening to the two of us but know what's going on in the game, I promise we'll keep you fully in the know. It's the start of a stretch of games, Gambo, that frankly we've been looking at for, a month and a half now, right?
Yeah, you've been pointing this out for quite some time. This 5 games in 8 days, East Coast swing with no real breaks. I mean, you play in the Nets, you play in the Knicks, you play in Philly, you play in Milwaukee, and then there was one other team I can't even remember. But it's a tough schedule. I mean, all of these games are tough games. You're not going to win them all. You're not going to lose them all. I mean, I don't see any of that happening. But, you know, can you go 2-3? Can you go 3-2? I mean, you're trying to hold on to the second spot. And this is where you either hold on to the second spot or you don't right here. If you play well enough,
I agree.
I think you're going to be able to hold off the Clippers. If you just have a really bad stretch and you go 1-4, then it's very possible that you could lose. You got a 3-game lead in the loss column. Okay. You go 2-3. You're still going to be, unless the Clippers win every game, the best that they could do is tie you. If you go 2-3 and the Clippers play the same amount of games and they win every game. So if they go 5-0, then maybe, just maybe, they could tie you. But then your schedule gets a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think you even pointed out, I think the biggest game that the Suns have coming up is going to be that Clipper game.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be their biggest game.
That and the Utah game. I think you are 110% correct. If you can, I'll zoom out to the next seven games and not just the next five. The road trip is the next five. But I'll include the two games after the road trip. If you come out of that seven-game stretch and you're still the number two seed in the West, I think you're going to remain the number two seed in the West, barring some disaster. Because by the time you're done with this seven-game stretch, and I'll go over the seven games in a second, by the time you're done with that stretch, you'll have nine games left on the season. And no, the schedule is not terribly imposing the rest of the way. It's Oklahoma City, it's Cleveland, it's Atlanta. It's New York. Okay, so they're pretty good. The Lakers, they're on there. They might start getting their guys back. You know, the next seven games, starting tonight at Milwaukee, third best record in the Eastern Conference. Wednesday night, Philadelphia, first best record in the Eastern Conference. Boston on Thursday, the second night of a back-to-back.
Yeah, Boston.
They're playing much better. That was
much
the one
better,
you
yep.
had neglected, right? Then on Sunday, so you got a couple of days off. You don't play Friday, you don't play Saturday, but then on Sunday, you're right back at it against the Brooklyn Nets, who are missing a bunch of guys, by the way. Kevin Durant, the thigh contusion, Harden is dealing with the hamstring. They're all banged up. They've only played seven games with those three guys together. That's
really?
It. That's it. In Brooklyn.
I knew it wasn't a lot. And, you know, now we don't know who's going to play in this game when they play him or not, but yeah, they haven't, you know, if they can't get those three guys together, I don't think they get out of the East.
Yeah. So Brooklyn, let me finish this real quick. The next night, so the second night of a back-to-back against the New York Knicks, whom the Suns haven't played yet this year. Home against the Clippers, home against the Utah Jazz. That is the Suns' schedule between now and the end of April. Those seven teams right there. You're right. Come out of that seven-game stretch,
second
and you're
place,
number two,
you're going to hold on to it.
You're going to finish number two.
You're going to hold on to it.
Because you will have earned it through that gauntlet.
Yeah.
Now, the encouraging news about a stretch like this, these are games the Suns play very well in. They have all year long, right? It's the games against the Oklahoma City. So maybe that's not a good example because they kicked Oklahoma City's teeth in the last time. It's the game against the Spurs. It's the game against the Rockets. Those are the games that we worry about around here because those are the games they give us reason to worry about around here. It's these games against teams like this that the Suns typically do very, very well in, have done very well in so far this
year. Yeah, they
year.
Seem to get up for these games, right? I mean, you see, they seem to get up for these games. They like the challenge of playing the better teams, and, you know, they've got a good record. Now, they're a good road team as well. I mean, they're a very good road team. You know, they I think you said it earlier, right? The last time they lost back-to-back games, you got to go to January.
Yeah.
The last time they lost two games in a row. So they didn't play well against the Spurs. They played terrible. They just were never in that game at all. They got blown out. The Spurs were resting key players. Poeltl and DeRozan and Patty Mills all didn't play, and the Spurs just kicked their ass. So now we'll see in this game right here with a little change in the starting lineup, Dario Saric and DeAndre Ayton playing together. So we'll see how that works out. Now, maybe, you know, I'm not sure why. I see DeAndre's on Giannis right away. So right away, they're going DeAndre on Giannis because Giannis went for 47 against them. And DeAndre with a really good defensive start to the game forces Giannis to miss a shot. And I think that could be one of the reasons, you know, why, too. But, you know, Giannis had 47 against them. They've got to figure out a way to stop him in this game.
Yeah, remember, he ended up, if I'm not mistaken, he ended up not taking the final shot against when the Bucks played the Suns the first time, and the Suns were like, yeah, we'll take that. We'll live with that.
Right.
Oh, it's a fine. Give it to somebody else. We'll be okay with that when it's all said and done. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, of course, we'll keep you updated on the Suns game, but we'll turn our attention to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and that start yesterday was a sigh of relief for fans, a glimmer of hope for the Arizona Diamondbacks. What if Madison Bumgarner takes another step back in his next start? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Ten-9, Phoenix Suns with the lead, 7.5 to go in the first quarter. They're 5 of 8 to start the game so far. The Milwaukee Bucks are 4 of 11. Make that 5 of 12. Little baseline floater there. And now it's the Bucks with the 11-10 lead as we're keeping you updated on what's going on with the Suns game, the opener of this road trip tonight.
Fun game. Fun game to watch. Can't wait to get home and watch it from start to finish.
I'm the same way. I'm really looking forward to watching this one. Absolutely no doubt about it. It's on ESPN 620. Yesterday was more of a relief than anything with Madison Bumgarner. I feel like you kind of think the same thing. I know it wasn't like we look at Madison Bumgarner's performance yesterday and go, okay, whew, that's it. He's there. Everything's fine. Everything's going to be okay. Good. He's back. No. Awesome. It wasn't anywhere close to that kind of a start. It was more a sense of relief. Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness he got through five and he only gave up the one run and he struck out five and he only gave up a couple of hits. You know, thank goodness it wasn't another one of those starts, because I don't know how many more of those type of starts that we've seen out of him this year he can take before they're going to have to do something about it. So for now, it's kind of like a reprieve.
It is a reprieve. Where would we be today if Madison Bumgarner got it lit up? They lose the series 3 out of 4. He pitches poorly again, and now his ERA is at 12 or 11 still, and you know, now we're talking about 4 starts where he can't get anybody out.
Where would we be?
Where would we be?
Thought exercise. Let's do a little hypothetical.
Injured list?
I think we'd be 2 more starts away from
injured list.
Phantom injured list. Let's physically shut him down and see what's going on with him. I think...
If you're looking for some sign, he did get out of that jam with the bases loaded in the second. And if they, you'd be looking for something that just wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Yesterday was a reprieve. He didn't pitch great, but he pitched like he gave up 1 run in 5 innings. We'll take that every time. He gave up a lot. You know, he got behind on the count a lot. Okay. So there's a lot to work on there. He got a bunch of strikeouts. Fastball velocity seemed to be okay, up a tick to about 91. Mm-hmm. Curveball looked good. A lot of flyouts. He didn't get any ground outs. There were a lot of flyouts. So he had that ball up in the zone a little bit. So I think that, you know, that there's stuff to build on for him. Getting him out of the game after 80 pitches, I'm glad Lovello did that, to be honest with you. I didn't want to see him come back out and take that chance. He needs confidence. He needs to gain some confidence.
Yep.
He got the win, pitched 5 innings. He gave up 1 run, got a bunch of strikeouts. He could leave that game feeling like, okay, I earned my paycheck today for the first time in a while.
Yeah, and I think a performance like yesterday is one that he can probably do that with, where even though he knows it certainly wasn't his best stuff, he got results with it, and that's the kind of building block confidence builder that can maybe propel him to another decent start the next time out. If he had had a start like we've seen the first three at a Med Bum yesterday, I don't think they would have pulled the plug on it yesterday. But I think he'd be 2 or 3 starts away, similar starts away from them. Yeah, like shutting it down and trying to figure something else out. Now, in an exclusive interview that the general manager gave to the Athletic website, Mike Hazen was quoted about Madison Bumgarner, quoted quite a bit about Madison Bumgarner. He was asked the question, and I don't have any audio to play here. I'm just going to read some quotes to you. If Bumgarner's struggles continue, what are your options in the short term? Answer, that is a too soon question. I don't anticipate that happening. Now, that's
the type of answer that I would expect. Listen, they got a lot of money invested in him, and they're not going to throw him out with the bathwater. You know, they're just not going to do it. First of all, they can't. There's not a lot of options outside of, you know, sending him to the injured list and giving him some time for a mental break and to work on some things without taking the mound. You're not demoting him to the minors. You're not cutting him and eating all of that money, and you can't trade him. There's not a lot of options here. You just got to work through it. I mean, you got to work through it and hope for the best with Madison Bumgarner. Yesterday, again, like you said, I agree, total reprieve. He gave them a reprieve. He gave them 5 days where that doesn't have to be that discussion on what to do with Madison Bumgarner.
Torrey Lovello, when asked exactly the same question by you and I a week ago, how long do you back Mad Bum when he's struggling like this? Lovello gave kind of a different type of answer, to be honest.
How long do you back him for? I mean, you can't keep throwing him out there every fifth day if he's not giving you 5 innings and giving you quality starts, right?
Yeah, that's not my decision. While the 26 guys are here, I'm coaching them the best way that I know how and putting them in the best position I possibly can. So, yeah, that's not my decision. I want to make sure that these guys get what they need from me, get what they need from the staff about believing, about pushing and going. So, you know, look, Bum needs to find out where that fastball is going, work off of that, and that's going to be our focus between these next starts.
I think it's a really interesting contrast in answers between Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello. Torrey Lovello, what do you do in the short term if he continues to struggle? That's not my call.
No.
Hazen, what do you do if he continues to struggle? Too soon to ask. I don't anticipate that happening.
Look, you better want a good relationship between those two. I mean, if Torrey goes to Mike and says, listen, we can't have him go out there every 5 days, but Mike says, hey, listen, I got no choice. There's nothing I could do. Nothing you could do. I mean, if your general manager tells you you got to pitch him every 5 days, you got to pitch him every 5 days.
But what I was going to say was you better believe, at least, and I could be wrong about this, you better believe that Mike Hazen in the back of his mind has a what if Madison Bumgarner continues to struggle in the short-term contingency plan, right? He's got to have one. He's not doing his job if he doesn't have one.
I don't think there's many options on that contingency plan.
There isn't, but you're always thinking about what if, right? You're always planning for the worst. And I imagine at some point, he can't publicly say what it is, but I imagine Mike Hazen somewhere has come up with the, if 3 or 4 starts from now, Madison Bumgarner is still rocking in an 11.5 ERA,
yeah,
we can't roll him out there every day. What am I going to do about it? He's had that thought. He's not going to say out loud what it is, but
yeah.
I promise you, he's had that thought.
Torrey's going to do, well, if Mike says you got to pitch him every 5 days, you got to pitch him every 5 days. But if the owner went to Mike Hazen and said, I don't want to see him pitch, then Mike's got to follow the owner.
Well, yeah.
So if Ken Kendrick says, listen, shelve him. We need to see, I want to see other guys pitch. Well, then you'll follow that. Like, there's a chain of command.
Of course. And I don't even know if it would come to that. I appreciate Mike publicly saying, that's a too soon question. I don't anticipate that happening. You kind of have to anticipate that happening. You know, you kind of have to have the okay, what happens if type planning where, man, if this thing just gets sideways, what are we going to do about it? And he said all the right things. We're happy we signed him, he said. The intention for us to sign him was to get a workhorse starting pitcher that he's been for the entirety of his career and an elite one. Yes, we are aware of what could happen as a veteran starting pitcher starts to rack up innings, but we felt like, and still do, that his physical strength, his ability to repeat his delivery, his knowledge, know-how, and presence would allow him to succeed. It's the we're happy we signed him line that, like, we were playing what if earlier. What if Mike Hazen could hop in the DeLorean, go back in time, and not sign Madison Bumgarner 2 years ago? I would guess he would not sign Madison Bumgarner.
There's no way. And he could say it all day, every day. Oh, I mean, we support him. I'm glad we did it.
He has to say that.
Can you imagine if he second-guessed himself now? I mean, 1 year into a 5-year contract, you start second-guessing. You have no choice.
You have no choice.
You have to say, I believe it's going to work out. I believe it. I mean, last year was a tough year. It was difficult. We still believe in this guy. And, you know, he's exactly what we wanted to lead our rotation. And he's a workhorse. I mean, you say all the things. You know, you may not believe half of them anymore, but you got to say it.
You have to rebuild confidence in the player.
In him.
And if you come out and publicly say, oh, yeah, I never would have done that deal if I could go back and do it all over again 2 years ago.
Right.
Or if you come out and say, what are your options in the short term if he struggles? Oh, we're going to fake some injury and put him on the injury list. You can't say any of that stuff if you're Mike publicly because you erode confidence in the player the minute you do it. Your confidence in the player is publicly eroded, and the player feels that erosion of confidence by you on him the minute you say it. But in your mind, you got to be thinking, boy, if I could go back and do that one all over again.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, or if he another 3 starts where he struggles, I got to figure out something to do because I can't keep doing this every single day. That's just how you play.
It'd be fun to go look at that free agency class and see where could $85 million have been better spent. How many guys, how many pitchers signed after him? I might look at this just for the fun of it. Who could they have gotten instead of Madison Bumgarner, you know, at that point? Now, again, they've got him for long term. He's coming off of 5 innings, 1 run allowed. You try to build off of that.
Yeah.
He's got some confidence. Everybody feels a little bit better about Mad Bum today. A little bit of a reprieve. Now you got Atlanta coming up. If he does it again, I might say, okay, he might have turned the corner. I wouldn't bet a car payment on it. But if he could do it two games in a row, yeah. I might feel like he has turned that corner.
It is something you usually associate more with veteran established teams, especially this time of year. Is it time for Monty Williams, though, to start considering resting some of his younger son's players? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
All right, you just heard Sarah with the update on the game a second ago. The first quarter is over. The Milwaukee Bucks, a one-point lead over the Phoenix Suns, 25-24. Chris Paul leading all scorers. He's got 11 points on the game, 5 of 7 shooting.
What about Giannis?
Giannis has 6 points on 3 of 9 from the floor.
That was really good defense from DeAndre. Does DeAndre Ayton have a block shot? I think I saw him block Giannis on a shot.
He has not been credited with one in the box score as of yet.
All right, that was good. I thought that DeAndre Ayton played very good defense on Giannis in that quarter.
There's been a few times, I've probably been able to watch it a little bit easier than you guys. There's been a few times, D.A. has altered Giannis's shot.
Okay. So what's he shooting on from the field?
3 of 9. So he's making 33% of his shots so far.
Listen, I don't know if this could hold up, but from what I've watched and what Jordan watched, DeAndre Ayton doing a very good job on Giannis right now defensively.
Yeah, I glanced up there a couple of times, and it did look like he was doing a very incredible job. Let's see. We got Devin Booker, who played the entire – and to DeAndre Ayton's credit, I don't think he normally does this. Ayton played the entire first quarter. I think usually they take him out at about the 3-minute mark.
Yeah.
To give him a little bit of a blow. He played the entire.
And bring in Dario.
Yeah, he played the. And Dario started, and in Dario's 8 minutes, he went 1 for 3 from the floor. He had a couple of rebounds, but he also had a couple of turnovers in the game as well. Devin Booker, off to a slow start with the shooting. 2 of 7 from the floor, but he's got 5 rebounds. He's got 4 points on the game.
I don't think this is going to be a game where you're going to get much offensively from DeAndre Ayton because of how much he has to work on a defensive end. What does it look like for him in the first quarter offensively?
He's got 4 points on 2 of 4 shooting.
Okay.
He's already got 6 rebounds. For the game.
6 rebounds.
He's already got 6.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
He's already got 6.
All right. Yep. I am really happy with the way DeAndre played. I don't think you'll get a lot offensively. If you get 10 points, 12 points, I'll take it. But you're probably looking at, you know, maybe 15 rebounds in this game if this keeps up. But the thing is, how much can they play him? Because Monty's going to want him on the court when Giannis is on the court. Clearly, that was what they did. They wanted DeAndre to guard Giannis because Giannis went for like 47 the last time they played him.
Yeah.
But very good defensive performance by DeAndre. Giannis did not have a good first quarter.
All right. So far, so good for the Phoenix Suns. Again, just down 1 to start the second quarter. It leads us into kind of this bigger picture question that I think. And you were at the game on Saturday night. You saw it with your own eyes.
Yes.
You're being unfairly blamed for the Suns losing the way they did.
Unfairly blamed.
It's not your fault.
Not my fault.
It is absolutely not your fault the Suns lost the way they did on Saturday
night. The arena looks amazing. It was my first time in there. Wow, the arena looks great.
It does look really good, doesn't it? I've seen one game there so far, and it's just spectacular. Those what $250 million can buy in terms of how to renovate a building. It looks, and they're not even all the way done. I think it's only 60%, 70% done.
Right.
There's still a lot of work to be done and a lot of stuff that we don't get to see, the locker room and the kind of the stuff downstairs. The question of rest has become like the big question now for the Phoenix Suns. It's been talked about over the course of pretty much the entire day here on the radio station. They looked like a tired, disinterested basketball team on Saturday night. I saw the game on TV. You were there live. They just looked fatigued, tired, like they needed a rest. Other teams are resting their guys. Hell, the Spurs were fined $25,000 by the league for resting 3 players. And they're not the number 2 seed in the West. They're fighting for the play-in spot. Should Monty start resting guys more in anticipation of clinching a playoff spot and not so worried about seeding or where they end up or anything like that?
I think so. I mean, I think so. Physically, mentally, it's been a long season. You know, at this point, smart coaches will rest their guys. I think you were telling me the Jazz, right? I mean, Rudy Gobert didn't play in that last game. Mike Conley's had injuries. He's an older player. Yeah, I think you have to strategically rest guys. Now, maybe you do it in a game you think you could win, or you do it in a game you expect to lose. You probably don't expect to lose many games, but you got to be smart about it. You got to pick the right game, and you got to rest guys. I think at this point, not only physically, but I think the mental break is important for them.
Yeah, I mean, it was Monty who was asked about it yesterday, and he said, look, to be honest with you, we haven't talked that much about it.
We haven't talked about it yet, but if we need to, we will. but it's not something that's come up. The one thing that we have going for us is most of our team is still pretty young.
Right.
One guy that, you know, most people would probably bring up in that discussion is Chris, and he just doesn't want to sit out. So we've tried to manage as best we can on off days and that kind of thing, but it's not something we've talked about just yet.
But it's not up to Chris at the end of the day. You know, I mean,
you got to be the adult in the room. Chris could say, I want to play. But you have to say, listen, you may want to play, but I need to do what I think is best. I'm the coach. And you're going to sit. I'm going to give you a day off. Don't think about anything. Just watch. Just watch the game. Enjoy it. Take it to give your body a break. Give your mind a break. Just take the day off. We're going to give you a little bit of a rest. 5 games in 8 days. I mean, do I think that all these guys are going to play 5 games in 8 days? I mean, part of me thinks no. Part of me thinks that Monty's going to look at that and say, okay, let's, you know, this is a longer road trip. Now, do you do it strategically where you could do it two ways? You could do what these other teams are doing. Like, I'm giving you, Devin and Chris and DeAndre, you all have the day off. Or you could be like, Devin, you have this day off. Chris, you have this day off, and still feel like you could try to win those games.
I would think that would be the way to do it rather than giving them all the day off, kind of en masse like that. I mean, it's our poll question. We've had this as a poll question all day, and it's still like basically a 50-50 split among our audience as to whether they should do this or not. And I can understand why. I mean, on the one hand, watching them play, they look like there are certain guys who could use a rest. Devin Booker looks like he could use a little bit of a break. His numbers aren't great the last 6 or 7 games. Chris Paul, before tonight, kind of looked like a guy who could use a little bit of rest. His shot had seemed a little off, right? But on the other hand, I mean, this team, in terms of postseason experience, in terms of, and Monty mentioned that earlier, they're going to the playoffs. We all know it. But all of those teams that are giving guys rests, they know what those guys are going to do come the postseason. The Suns have no idea.
No.
Suns have no idea how Devin Booker is going to respond to playoff minutes. They have no idea how DeAndre Ayton is going to respond to playoff minutes. Whereas LeBron, you can give LeBron all the time off during the regular season you want because you know exactly what you're going to get when the playoffs start, right? Donovan Mitchell, you know exactly what you're going to get when the playoffs start. Devin, you don't really know. And so you could argue that those guys need all the time they can get before the playoffs to work on their games and make themselves as sharp as they can be. I can really see both sides of this equation.
There's one other side to look at it. You could be like, listen, we're just going to play as hard as we can until there's about 3 or 4 games left. And then if we're playing for something, we'll play. And then if we're not, we won't. So you could say, I'm going to play as hard as I can. But say there's 4 games left and your playoff positioning can't be changed. You give that, then I have no problem giving those guys 2 of those 4 days off. Now, they seem to be like, oh, you don't want to get out of rhythm. You'll take the rest for a game or two. If there's no way your seeding can be, you're stuck at 2. You're not going to move up to 1, but you're not going to fall to 3. You could play it like that and take it right down to the wire to make sure that you try to win all these games because you're trying to get the best seed possible. And then at that point, if you're locked in, then you can say, okay, we're going to rest, guys.
Look, we had this conversation earlier about the seed, and at the end of the day, does it really make a huge difference if you're number 2 versus number 3? No, it doesn't. You're in. You're going to have a tough matchup no matter what, eventually, one way or another. I do think 2 is something worth fighting for. I do think 2 is something worth pushing for as a seed because it means enough. And here's what it might mean, okay? If you're 3... you might end up playing the Denver Nuggets in the first round. The Denver Nuggets might take you to 7 games. If you're 2, you might end up playing the Memphis Grizzlies in the first round. You might be done with the Memphis Grizzlies in 5 games. And you might buy yourself a little rest, in between the first and the second round. So finishing number 2, I think, is a battle worth fighting for if you're the Suns. What I suspect is going to happen is kind of something what you just said a second ago. I think they're going to go hard on this road trip. They're going to go hard for the next 7 games because the schedule demands it. The schedule, it's the Bucks and it's the Sixers, and it's the Nets, and it's the Celtics, and it's the Clippers, and it's the Jazz, all right? The schedule is going to demand that they go hard the next week and a half. Reassess after that. Play the next 7 games. Don't give any guys any rest. See where you stand 7 games from now. If you're still locked into the number two seed, maybe then you can start strategically playing with it here.
So last year, the Lakers played the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. The Lakers in the first round took care of Portland in 5 games. They took care of Houston in 5 games in the second round. Denver played 7 against Utah and 7 against the Clippers.
It matters.
Huge advantage for the Lakers. Well rested. So they played a total of 10 games going into the Western Conference Finals, where the Denver Nuggets played a total of 14. They played 4 more games than the Lakers did going into the Western Conference Finals.
And that's why the number 2 seed is something worth fighting
for. I get it.
16 games to go.
I get it. You know, I get it. I'm ready to break out my Mulan. You know, it's a seed worth fighting for. You know, go Donny Osmond. It's a seed worth fighting for. Right?
You're getting a standing
ovation. Worth fighting for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how's that go? How's that song go?
Baby. What do we want? A girl worth fighting for.
A girl worth fighting for. This is a seed worth fighting for. Break out my inner Donny Osmond, man.
Please,
let's go.
More Disney music.
Wait, is that what the focus groups say about the Burns and Gambo show?
Exactly.
You know, I like those guys, and Sarah's a good add to the team. More Disney tunes, please.
I think it's not
enough Mulan chat.
It's not a bad song.
No, not at all. Not at all. Phoenix Suns and the Bucks are tied right now at 34. Chris Paul continues to lead all scorers with 13. Giannis has started to come around a little bit. He now has 11 for the game on 5 of 11 shooting. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, in his 2 seasons in Arizona, Jordan Hicks has been an average linebacker for the Cardinals. Steve Keim might have a chance to upgrade that position. Should he with the first pick in the draft? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. All right, quick update on the Suns game. 6.5 minutes to go in the first half. Suns with a 1-point lead over the Milwaukee Bucks, 37-36. Jay Crowder, 6 points off the bench. He's 2 of 4 from the 3-point line. Cam Johnson, 5 points. In fact, the Suns are 5 of 12 so far from the 3-point line.
That's good.
45%
take
rate
that
right there. The Bucks, not so much. 2 of 12. From the 3-point line so far, and that is one of the differences so far in the game. Another troubling trend, by the way, with this one. Mikal Bridges, scoreless in 10 minutes so far of game action.
Yeah.
Now, I know he's normally the defensive guy, but I will point out a writer for NBA.com on Twitter tweeted this out a moment ago. Mikal Bridges went scoreless in the first quarter of the game. That's his 15th scoreless quarter in his last 8 games. So he has gone without a point 15 times in a quarter in his last 8 games.
It's a good question for James Jones when you have him on.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, listen, are you worried about hitting a wall? Do guys need rest? You know, some of the struggles of some of the players. It is interesting to see. I mean, Mikal is definitely a defensive guy. There's not a lot of plays called for Mikal, but he always finds a way to get his baskets.
Yeah, he does. And the fact that he's not... I mean, look, we keep saying this idea of should they rest, should they rest, should they rest. These are the most intense, meaningful basketball games these young players have ever played in their lives, right? And there's an emotional, mental toll that I'm sure it's a grind, man. And I'm sure they're looking at the playoffs, and I'm sure they're thinking, okay, we're almost there, we're almost there. Are they starting to run out of gas a little bit, and do they need to accommodate that? I don't know. A good question for James Jones. We'll talk more about it throughout the course of the week, but I just wanted to point that out, that Mikal Bridges does not have a point yet, and it's a 37-36 game with 6.5 to go. The draft, the first round of the NFL draft, we're 10 days away from the first round of the draft, and we've looked at all the mocks, we've seen all the scenarios, there will be more to come, there's much more conversation to have. A name that you brought up last week is really stuck with a lot of people, and it's stuck with me, and that's Micah Parsons, the linebacker out of Penn State. On the surface, the reaction I had to Micah Parsons was simply, man, you drafted Hassan Reddick 4 years ago. You drafted Isaiah Simmons a year ago.
Can you go that route again?
You really want to go to that well again? But is Micah Parsons just too good to deny that? And I thought of you when I saw this mock draft on The Athletic, and I call it the Micah Parsons draft, because in this mock draft, the three wide receivers are gone. The top 2 cornerbacks are gone. Elijah Vera Tucker is gone. And so if you're going to ask me, what is the scenario that unfolds that might make the Cardinals think about Micah Parsons? That's it right there. Five quarterbacks, three wide receivers, the two cornerbacks.
So do you take the best linebacker or the next best wide receiver or the next best offensive lineman?
Or the next best cornerback.
Yeah, do you take the – yeah, so that's the big question right there. I mean, how do you – is it – listen, is it possible that they've got the fourth wide receiver rated higher than the top linebacker? Yes. It's possible that their fourth wide receiver is rated higher than the linebacker. But it's also possible it's not, that they actually say, hey, listen, I could get the number one linebacker in this whole draft class – instead of the fourth best wide receiver.
Yeah.
And I'll get a wide receiver in the second round because it's deep. Or I'll get a running, I'll add an offensive piece in the second round. Could be a running back, could be a wide receiver, but I'll get one to help my offense in the second round. Right now, I have a linebacking core in which it's very possible that I don't have Jordan Hicks next year.
Right.
And that I don't have Chandler Jones next year.
Yep.
And that the only thing I got is I got a 2-year veteran Isaiah Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
And I might want to have another guy to build that could go sideline to sideline. I could rush the passer. So that's just, you know, that's something to look at. Parsons is the best linebacker in this draft. I would probably put him in my five. Like, I would, like, if I'm looking at five guys, it's very likely that he's, you know, he's the guy. Now, do I think he's going to be there? I still have my doubts that he's going to be there. I'm worried about the Lions taking him early at 7 because they need defensive help.
Well, and if he's not there, fine. I saw this mock draft today, and I said, man, if this is what reality is going to look like, and I know to look for reality at a mock draft is futile. That's a bad idea. But it's just a scenario where he might be there. Now, a couple of things as I'm listening to you talk about him. Okay, number one, okay, could they go to the linebacker well again after taking Isaiah Simmons and Hassan Reddick? Well, I was listening to you talk about wide receivers. Man, are they going to go to the wide receiver well again after all of the capital they've spent on wide receivers the last few years?
Now, are you talking about the DeAndre Hopkins capital or the draft capital?
Both.
They've gone, what, second round for Isabella?
Second round for Kirk.
Second round for Kirk.
Fourth round for Akeem Butler. Sixth round for Keyshawn Johnson. Third round for Chad Williams. I'm sorry, I'm not cutting you off, but I'm just thinking.
No,
of,
I know you are.
But
I'm thinking Chad Williams didn't work out. Keyshawn Johnson hasn't worked out. Andy Isabella hasn't worked out. Akeem Butler hasn't worked out. I mean, just because you drafted all those guys doesn't mean like, oh, I can't draft anymore. No, if they had worked out, you wouldn't need to draft them. But a bunch of those guys didn't work out.
Right, and I'm using that same argument, and I'm applying it to the linebacker position. Okay. So what if you've already drafted Isaiah Simmons? So what if you drafted Hassan Reddick a few years ago? Is he the best player that you can draft for your football team? Then go get him.
So you're going to solidify one of these. So if you could solidify linebacker for the next few years or wide receiver for the next few years.
As long as you don't miss, yes.
Or offensive line. If you get Vera Tucker.
If he's there.
Like, you could solidify a position for a number. Like, if you get Vera Tucker, he could be insurance in case Justin Pugh is gone. If you get Micah Parsons, he could be insurance in case you lose Chandler or in case you lose Jordan Hicks. He could be insurance. If you get a wide receiver, that could be insurance for A.J. Green when A.J. Green is gone. So you do have the ability to really solidify one of these positions real strong.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm only saying this almost more to myself than anything. Like, I shouldn't object so much to Micah Parsons being the pick because I'd be thrilled that they got a wide receiver. And yet, man, they've swung and missed at so many wide receivers the last few years. You know, I mean, why would I be bothered if they're gonna do it at linebacker compared to wide receiver? I shouldn't be bothered by that. And then the other thing to bring up, too, is if Micah Parsons is there, like in this hypothetical presented in the mock draft, that might be a player somebody wants to trade up for. That might be
you
a player.
You brought that up earlier. That's interesting. I haven't really thought about that. But maybe somebody's looking at, hey, listen, there was a run on five quarterbacks and three wide receivers and two offensive linemen. I can't believe the defensive players that dropped. And at that point, you know, maybe you're right. I mean, maybe somebody does make a call and say, hey, I got a chance here to get one of the best defensive players in his draft at 16. That never happens.
Yeah. Yeah. It's time for the Coors Seltzer. What's on tonight? Brought to you by Coors Seltzer. When you drink a Coors Seltzer, you help save the Salt River. 3.5 minutes to go in the first half, second quarter, sorry. And the Suns are beating the Milwaukee Bucks 46-42. Again, 3.5 minutes to go in the second quarter of that game. We'll be watching that tonight, and the Minnesota Wild at the Coyotes. We'll be watching that as well. Face-off in that one is at 6 o'clock.
Cannot wait to get home and watch the Suns game.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be
this is a battle right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a battle royale that goes right down to the very end. 46-43, Suns with a 3-point lead. The rundown with Jordan Bird in for Luke is up next. We will see you at straight up 2 o'clock tomorrow here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.